coming up on the Open Source Podcast with Tony Motley. Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist Renee Beyer said this about why photographs are important. In this fast-paced world where the emphasis is on immediacy, a still photograph stops time. It gives the viewer a moment to think, to react, to feel. On today's program, we'll talk to Hava Gurevich, the director of Art-to-Art Circulating Exhibitions, about the power of still images and what makes a photograph iconic.
This struggle that photographers have to be seen as equals within the art world is still going on today, in part because photography isn't just fine art. Photography can be used as evidence. I mean, everything from crime scenes and mugshots, those are photographs, but they don't necessarily are considered art.
For the past 15 years, Hava Gurevich has crisscrossed the United States, lecturing, exhibiting art and photographs at museums, and consulting with exhibitors. With master's degrees in both fine arts and photography, Hava Gurevich is uniquely qualified to speak to why, even in our fast-paced world of multimedia, still photographs remain such a powerful medium. Hava, welcome to Open Source.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you doing this. I find people such as yourself that are very creative and very involved in other endeavors, you know, you don't do what you do to come on programs like this and talk about it. But our show is really about design and art and creativity. And I am personally fascinated by photographs. And so the chance to talk to you about art and photography is exciting to me. Tell me why art is important in your life.
Well, I'm an artist myself, so that is a way that I express my own creativity and my own sort of inner thoughts. It's how I connect to the world, I feel. And I strongly believe that, I mean, we are all artists when we come into this world. Visual language, but also vocalizing and even movement are ways in which we communicate from very young age, before we have real language, before we can talk or read or write. Kids draw pictures and they make sounds and they tap, and you know, so it's a really primal way of communicating. And I find that a lot of times I get a better idea of who I am when I'm involved in making art. What's really unique about photography is that it's so democratic. It's so easily accessible to everyone. You don't have to have studied art or understand much about art history to look at photographs and get meaning from them. And when I discovered photography when I was in art school, when I was an undergrad, I tried everything. I tried drawing and design and painting and sculpture, metalwork. And I felt that I had a lot to say, but I was searching for the right medium. And then photography came along and everything just kind of clicked, you know, kind of no pun intended, but there was something really exciting about being able to translate what I see in the real world into this sort of two-dimensional image. And it flattens certain aspects of the world, but at the same time, it brings out through contrast and texture and composition, it really brings out something that my mind may have like caught a glimpse of, and it was always very exciting when something that I thought I saw, or some meaningful connection visually in the world that I thought I saw, and then I took a photograph, and then when the photograph was developed, I recognized it, and it's like, yes, that's what I saw. And that was really exciting. And there are some photographers early on when I was looking at that really brought that home to me. And I can talk about some of those photographers.
I want to do that too. I want to get back to that idea though. I think it's kind of when you growing up, I remember, you know, there'd be this thing where they'd say, well, you can't read, you just look at the pictures. And it's kind of funny, you know, that it's kind of meant to be an insult among smaller kids. But really, the pictures, they tell stories. And I think a photograph tells us a story about a moment in time that a film or a painting doesn't. It's just different. And I think that in my lifetime, there are photographs that remain in my mind iconic. I remember as a kid looking at was it Life or Look magazine, and I wasn't alive when President Kennedy died, but the magazine was focused on that event. And I just think that seeing little John saluting the casket, and there's certain things, you know, you never get over those things. You don't forget them. What makes a photo iconic in your mind?
Well, there's two ways to look at that, because I can look at it as from the perspective of how it changed photography as a medium, or how it changed how we as a culture look at pictures. And I can look at it from more of a social aspect of how a photograph changed the world, how it changed society.
Now, those are two good points. I'm going to stop you there. Let's talk about a photo that's changed photography, and then let's talk about a photo that's changed the world. Can you give me an example of either of those
or both? Yeah. So one of the most famous photographs that I think has changed photography is Alfred Stieglitz's photograph of the steerage. And it was done in 1907, I think. And I mean, there's been volumes written about it, so I don't want to give like a big history lecture, but this is a time when photography was trying to come into its own and be recognized as an art form. And I think it's interesting because this struggle that photographers have to be seen as equals within the art world is still going on today. And in part because photography isn't just fine art. Photography can be used as evidence. I mean, everything from crime scenes and mugshots, those are photographs, but they don't necessarily are considered art. You have photojournalism, you have documentary photography, you have snapshots. Now that everybody has a camera on their phone, photographs, everybody can take a photograph. I mean, I think, I don't remember when Kodak introduced its first camera, but it was around that time, in the late 18th century or early 19th century, late 19th century, early 20th century. Somewhere in there, Kodak introduced its first point-and-shoot camera, democratizing the process. And suddenly everybody could take a photograph, which made it less precious. You can reproduce a photograph many times. So because of that, photographers who wanted to take their craft seriously and wanted to be considered artists and creators and they were doing all kinds of things where they were using very conventional motifs in art, like a landscape or the nude, sort of allegorical scenes, things like that. And so they were composing images in their camera and intentionally throwing things out of focus to give it kind of these pictorial feel. And all kinds of things. There's some beautiful work that was done. That's not the point. I'm not disparaging that work, but Alfred Stieglitz was one of the top photographers at the time and sort of leading this movement. And then he came across this scene on a boat. I think it kind of like stopped him in his tracks because it was so stark, and he took a photograph of that. And if you don't know the photograph, it's worth just Googling and looking at it, because it's, he describes it as this aha moment, this epiphany moment for him that changed the way he thought about photography. And there's something about it compositionally, it's just brilliant. There's lines. I mean, you can look at it from that perspective of converging lines and parallel lines and diagonal lines and darks and lights and shapes that repeat. But what he's also captured is a scene from the real world, where there's the upper class on top of the boat and the lower class on the bottom of the boat. And it was this epiphany moment for him that changed the way he thought about photography. And there's something about it compositionally, it's just brilliant. There's lines. I mean, you can look at it from that perspective of converging lines and parallel lines and diagonal lines and darks and lights and shapes that repeat. But what he's also captured is a scene from the real world, where there's the upper class on top of the boat and the lower class on the bottom of the boat.
And you say boat, and that's really like a ocean
a
liner. It's a ship, right?
Ocean
it's
liner.
A ship.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of shows culturally a divide.
And, yes.
And it's the upper class is pictured above the people in the lower class.
It has a composition that was just there, but it's sort of like there's something about the composition being angular and very modern. It's not soft and pictorial. It has this sort of urbanization feel to it. There's man-made objects and there's humans and they're real, and it's shot. There's something about it because it existed. It actually happened. He saw this. So it's rooted in reality, and they are not actors. So before that, there were lots of people in photographs, but they were typically staged. There wasn't a whole lot. I mean, there were other examples of photographers who just photographed scenes on the street. But this one, it had a message in addition to just being beautifully composed about social class and humanity. And so it just had everything in there. And I think what Stieglitz understood in that moment is that photography doesn't have to try and look like painting or try and look like a drawing or any other art form. That photography had its own unique voice, and photography had its own unique contribution to art. And to that, there's something that you could say with photographs that you can't say with any other medium, basically.
Wow. So,
and that's
powerful. Now, tell me about a photograph that's changed the world. Is there one that you can share with us?
I think one of the most famous photographs that really changed the world, and or at least in the U.S., and it's really relevant again now, is a photograph by Dorothea Lange called Migrant Mother. And this is during the Great Depression, and Dorothea Lange was part of the FSA, which was basically the government hired these photographers. Was it the Federal Security? I'm actually not. I can't.
Is this the program? I think I know what you're talking about. Where The government hired a bunch of artisans to.
Yeah.
It's kind of a work program. In
it was a work program.
Yes. But a lot of, in fact, a lot of art that became exhibited in public spaces and federal buildings and courthouses around the country came out of that. Is that right?
Yes. And so Dorothea, and they sent these photographers to document what was happening in the country. And so this photograph was taken in the mid 30s. And this is a photograph of a woman who is she's beautiful. She's classically beautiful. In a different time, she could have easily been a fashion model. I mean, she has just classically beautiful facial structure, but she's also looks aged beyond her years from just hard work and stress. And she's the way she's posed. It's almost like the Madonna and Child. She has a baby that she's cradling, and then she has two other children, and their faces are turned away. And there's they're destitute. It just captures everything about what was happening to people during that time. And it's not the only photograph, but it's one of the photographs that really sort of mobilized the country to understand how this was affecting people, the Great Depression, and there was something else going on. There were migrant workers, so wasn't there a drought as well?
Right, there was a drought in the Midwest. I guess, and so farmers were unable to grow food. Yeah, you know, that's a good point. You know, and I think about what you said, and it, just as you're talking about this, and I mentioned this to you once before, that the photo of Cassius Clay at the time, who was a significant underdog to the world champion at that time, Sonny Liston. And there's that photo of Clay, young Clay, newly crowned champion, standing over Liston. In triumph, not flouting his victory, but just in that moment. Yeah. And it's just that image of this one man defeating this other man who seemed unbeatable. Yeah. And I think
like David and Goliath.
Yes. And it like you said, it reminds you not only of that victory, but the entire political, social, historical elements that surrounded that.
Yes.
And you think about, as we look at that photo and what photos can do, you think about what came immediately after. I mean, he had been 2 years prior to that, 3 years prior to that, he was an Olympian. And then a few years later, he's an outcast and he's stripped of his title and he can't. So there's so much. He changed his name. He was aligned with Nation of Islam. There's so much that goes into just that moment, but that one moment says a lot to us.
And it changes in those moments. I mean, that's, you know, that cliche expression that a picture is worth a thousand words. I mean, it comes from someplace. And I think there are situations where that is absolutely true, because there is body language and emotion and everything that you see, and it's real. And you recognize it as a human being, and you can share in that, whether it's victory or destitute or whatever those emotions are. You can share in that moment so viscerally, in a way that saying it doesn't have the same impact.
No, and even reading it, I'm just, as we talk, I'm thinking also about, if you look at a photograph of baseball in the 40s and 50s and the way people dressed up to go to the ballpark, it speaks about the culture of that time. It's just, reading it in a history book doesn't do it justice. If you see it on film, it goes by so quickly, you don't really get it. And I think looking at the photo, you take the time to really assess everything that's in that image.
Yeah.
And that tells us so much about, in fact, they are stories within themselves, I believe.
That's very true. I wanted to add, there's another photographer who actually predates Dorothea Lange by a decade at least, and that's Lewis Hine. And his work, he's famous for a lot of different things that he did. He would go to Ellis Island and photograph new immigrants as they came off the boats, on the ships. And those are incredible, powerful photographs. And, you know, and they still resonate today. They resonate with everyone because of, you know, the new immigrant photographs. He also used to photographed every kind of worker in the fields, in the factories, on the railroad. And one of the things that he did, he photographed these kids that were working in factories. And those images struck a nerve with society. And I'm kind of like really condensing the story, but he was very instrumental in bringing about some laws in terms of I think kids working in factories.
I think you're right. Yeah. And you mentioned to me when we spoke once before about a photograph with regarding Napoleon. Napoleon?
You know,
tell us about that.
Oh, okay. So this is a memory. I don't know exactly who the photographer was. I just know that this was a very early photograph. And this is back in a time when photographers they had to basically make their own cameras. They had to make their own emulsions. They carried around these giant cameras on the back of a donkey, or, you know, there were no enlargers. So basically, if you wanted to make a large photograph, you had to have a large negative, and the negatives were made from glass. Although that one could have been, I'm pretty sure this was a glass negative that then was printed on paper. But it belongs to a private collector. And I was looking at this photograph, and I believe the same photographer, I mean, there were these photographers at the time, they were like independently wealthy scientists / inventors / explorers. And they brought back early photographs of the pyramids and some other exotic locations and bring them back to Europe. But this one, what I recall from it is that there was, you know, it was shot from a distance, but you could see in the center of the photograph this some structures and some horses and some people. And the collector told me that this was a photograph of Napoleon's cavalry. And I wish I remembered more details about who it was and the dates and all that. But what struck me is that I think about that time of history as being so far in the distance that, you know, you see paintings, we're used to seeing paintings. The Mona Lisa was painted, you know, centuries ago, and we accept that. But a photograph, there's something different about that, because it's so immediate. The fact that light traveled from the lens, hit the subject, then came back to the lens and recorded it. It's real. It's real evidence of a time that I just didn't think was possible to be captured.
When you mentioned it, it struck me, like, how could that be? I mean, you think of Napoleon as this figure in history books,
right?
And I had to think of what Napoleon. But yeah, that's amazing. So that had to be what, the late 1800s?
I think so, and I now I have to, like, I mean, the earliest known photograph, I'm just quickly looking it up, earliest photography.
See, I didn't realize it went back that far. Wow.
Yeah.
1827. Yeah. Okay. clearly than it could have been Napoleon in a photo. I mean, we know it's possible anyway.
Yeah, it's possible. Right, right. And there's, there were processes back then that, like, they don't exist anymore. And it's, so again, it was all, the photographers at the time, they were creating their own chemistry and their own way of doing things. Some of the very first negatives were wax negatives, this paper covered in wax, and they had to expose it for days. So, yeah, but it's just interesting because we think of photography, especially now, as something so instant. Like, I take my phone, I take a photograph, and within seconds, it's on Instagram.
Right. And I, so, you know, I think we're so close to the end. It's frustrating to me that time limits us. But what I'm going to do is get a list from you, and I'm going to post an article that's going to be a companion to this conversation so that the public can see some of the images that we've talked about. But I think about how when word processors came out, and even now, everybody pretty much has access to Google Docs or Microsoft Word, but everybody's not a writer. And right. Everybody has a camera on their phone, but they're not all photographers. Not in the way that we're talking about. But
no.
How has Instagram, what's that done to the art and science of photography in your mind?
That's a good question. I think on the one hand that it really helps further democratize the medium, and you know, you can argue both sides of it, that it has in some way demystified it, the process, and
that's politics, but that's important, I think, even though, and it would take someone with a master's degree in photography to make that statement. No, seriously, it would. But there is an element of the idea that this democratizes something. And that's important. Why is that important?
I think for me, it goes back to the idea that art, visual art, which is my language, is something that we all do, you know, something that we all did as children. But most were not encouraged to continue using that language once they started to read and write.
I hate to interrupt. That's an aha moment for me, because we started our conversation and you started discussing children. And I think we've come full circle back to that. That idea, well, that Instagram gives us that kind of inclusion that we had when we didn't have to ask to be included when we were children. We just did it.
Yes. And in its purest form, Instagram can be a way to suddenly communicate through pictures with a wide audience. You know, I mean, there's a part of it that has to do with influencers and money and commercialism. But that can be said about just everything. You invent something these days and within, you know, it happens so fast. Somebody figures out a way to make money from it. Somebody figures out a way to game the system. But for a majority of people who simply use it to share photos and look at photos, I think that's the thing that kind of made it more fun than maybe it's like parent company Facebook, where there's a lot of words. it's more immediate. You're just looking at photographs. You're just looking at pictures, and I think there's something about that that's a lot of fun. How is it art? You know, that becomes a philosophical question about what is art.
We could argue that all day, though, but I think you're right. I think the fact that people create these photographs and they share them, it is powerful. And I don't know whether or not, and I'm not qualified to say whether or not it's art. It's not most of the time. It's not in my mind, it's, partly because it's not really memorable. It's not. It's just pretty. Yeah.
They're pretty photographs. And I think it makes that argument about, aesthetics in art. There was a time when formally, where a good photograph or an art photograph was all about beauty. And then there's this other side of photography where it is so primed to be an instrument of change or an instrument of like being able to convey a message. Like you can make a photograph beautiful. You can utilize a classic composition and other visual language that has been proven to be successful, but at the same time, you can direct the viewer's attention onto something that's happening in the world, whether you're photographing an injustice that's happening, or capturing a moment in time that just encapsulates a lot of information about that time and maybe changes people's minds about things. And if you look at iconic photographs, I think to me, there's usually a marriage of both. They have, there's something about them that you can look at them purely formally, but then there is a content that comes through, and the more you look at it, the more you see, and you can come back to it and see it again or see even deeper. And for the most part, it's lacking from Instagram because you're just seeing glossy, pretty photographs for the most part. And that's what it is. They're just little sound bites. I think that's what they're meant to be.
And I think as we close, I think about this, just struck me that photographs and iconic photographs become a part of our memory. And philosophically, this whole I think, therefore I am, and this whole idea of who we are as people, as humans, is based on our ability to reflect.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe the power that photos have is partly due to they help us remember and remind us of important moments, not fleeting moments, but important moments in time.
And I think they also drive culture forward.
Absolutely.
We live in such a visually saturated world, and this idea of iconic photographs at this point in time, sort of rising up to the top and being, it gets harder, but I mean, they still happen, and they usually end up being events that shape history. So I tend, when I fell in love with photography, I was looking at this sort of like early 20th century modernism, and a time when photography was coming into its own and as a medium. And so that, I always go back to those photographers like Henri Cartier-Bresson and his idea of the decisive moment, where everything in the photograph aligns, all the lines converge, and you just capture this moment. And he used to say, if you saw it happen, it's already too late to photograph it. Like, you have to anticipate it. And his best images do that in a way it's just amazing. That he would see some things like this is about to happen, and you don't have time to think about it. It happens so instantly in your mind, and it's exciting for me to go back and look at the way photographers change how we view the world. And there are some famous photographs from wars.
Absolutely, yes.
They're sometimes pretty graphic, and other disasters, like even from like 9/11, they're arresting in that. They don't just represent disaster or tragedy. you have to stop and realize it's these are real people. This is a human being, and they're being like forever, like frozen in time, at this moment, and it's such a human moment that just kind of really gets to the core of what it means to be alive. And I think photography is unique in that. But it's a form of expression. And I think I like the idea of Instagram because it helps, you know, it's one kind of photography. You can also flip through glossy fashion magazines and get a whole other kind of photography, which also has a rich history with some amazing photographers who sort of forged ahead and created like new ways to see things and new ways to connect to things.
And I think that what you're saying there is important too, that you consider we could talk for an hour about historical photographs. We could talk about another hour about photographs from wars. We could spend another hour talking about fashion photography. We could spend another hour talking about sports photography. We could just, you go down the list, and I mean, and that that gives it the importance, that the value is there. And I mean, I wish we had more time, but I'm going to share some of these images that we discussed. My guest this week has been Hava Gurevich, and she is with Art to Art and exhibiting photos and art all over the country. And I really appreciate, Hava, you being here and just giving us 35 minutes of your time. It's so important. It's something that I care deeply about. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Open Source with Tony Motley, and I appreciate everybody listening. Like it, share it, and we'll talk to you next time. Open Source with Tony Motley is a production of Duet Digital Media and McLaughlin Media.